You know what lasts forever? God's word. Everything else fails, but not his word. It holds and delivers exactly what he promises. His word is so solid and lasting, you can build your life and hope of eternity on it. Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, a daily, verse-by-verse Bible study with the church, past and present. It all starts Reformation Day, October 31st. Learn more at thewordendures.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. A lot of people have said, not at my school. It's not going to happen at my school. You don't know our school board. You don't know our superintendent. You don't know the faculty and the teachers. Well, if you live in Illinois, it may be difficult in a couple months to say that anymore at all. Not at my school. The LGBTQ agenda is not pushed at my school. Well, what's going to change in 2020? Joining us to talk about transgenderism and the Illinois public schools, Joy Pullman, managing editor of The Federalist, author of the book The Education Invasion, and recent columns titled How Illinois Schools Teach Preschoolers to Celebrate Transgenderism, and Hundreds of Transgender People Want to Go Back to Their Birth Sex as Formerly Trans Woman. Joy, welcome back.
Hi there.
What changes are coming here within the next few months to Illinois public schools?
So starting July 1st, 2020, so that's basically at the end of this school year, the state legislature has passed a law requiring all public schools to teach children LGBT history and only buy textbooks that include the topic. And that's not just in Illinois. Laws like this are also in place in California, Colorado, New Jersey, and Oregon, and they're being considered in a number of other state legislatures as well.
When we say Illinois public schools, are we talking about the upper grades, high schools, junior high? What are we talking about?
That's a good question. I mean, the way that schools have interpreted it so far has included teaching these kinds of lessons to literally preschoolers. So I just wrote today about kind of a school district on the vanguard of this that's one of the first to delve into doing what the state legislature is requiring all public schools to do. And in my article, I sampled the curriculum that they're teaching this week to preschoolers in their care. In fact, this particular public school district in a North Chicago suburb is only a preschool through eighth grade school district. So they have mostly prepubescent children in their care.
And you say that they kind of are going to be the model for how many of the public schools in Illinois will interpret this legislation. What do you mean by that?
Well, the school district, so I did a number of open records requests to find more information about what they were doing. And among the materials that I found, and part of that was the folks who were developing this curriculum in District 65 explicitly saying that they are basically at the forefront of what the rest of the state is going to be doing. So there's people who, you know, work together on curriculum committees to develop the things that the kids do. And so over this summer, this school district was putting it together and they were explicitly saying, you know, this is perfect timing. A lot of other schools are going to be looking to us to get to use us as a model to use the resources that we've developed. Isn't this so great that we've done this at just the perfect timing when the legislature came along and is now going to require everybody else to do the same thing that we're doing?
So what do you envision the basic message being to, at this point, preschoolers and up in Illinois schools?
Well, I don't have to envision it because, I mean, people, if they want to see the actual articles, the curriculum itself is posted publicly online. You can get a link to it in my article. And so I sampled kind of a couple of things. So just to give some examples for people, I looked at a lot more things than I was able to put in an article. And people who are really obsessed with partially traumatizing materials, I had to, you know, kind of hide my computer from my kids while I was looking at this. But let me just give a couple of examples. So I'm sure a lot of folks have heard about, for example, the book called Heather Has Two Mommies. They maybe have heard about there is a transgender teenager who is the star of a reality show called Jazz Jennings. The curriculum included a video of Jazz reading his book to these preschoolers in these classes. There's another book that was read aloud on so a lot of videos of people reading picture transgender LGBT picture books aloud to the kids. And another one of them was a book called My Princess Boy. I mean, if people are interested in how crazy this stuff is, I'm sure it's at your local library. You can go check these books out. I recommend you don't leave them laying around the house. And I included a couple of the videos, you know, that were as part of this curriculum shown to the kids as in my article of people. I mean, they're just a couple of minutes long, typically about 5 minutes each. So they included, for example, one of these videos was a young boy saying, here, let me find the quote. So they're talking about, my family looks like this. You know, I have a single mom. I'm an adopted child. And then, you know, so they go through all these pictures of these families and them explaining who is a part of their family. And one of them is a little boy saying, my two moms are Marilyn and Adrian, and my two dads are Michael and Barry. It's not clear exactly if they're all in a polyamorous relationship, all four of them together, or if the little boy is shuttled between a lesbian household and a gay household. I mean, maybe that's not explained because the kids watching this video are as young as three. You know, but there's just some crazy, I mean, just overt, very direct. It's not at all veiled. It's very open and direct. So, for example, the kids are shown a picture of two gay dads holding an obviously adopted child, and the teacher is in the curriculum includes scripts, so it's basically a bunch of PowerPoints that their teachers are supposed to show to the children during their class time. And at the bottom of each slide is a scripted thing that the teacher is supposed to be saying to the kids. So above a picture of a gay couple holding an obvious adopted baby, and it's obviously adopted because they're of different races. You know, the question at the top says, is this a family? And the teacher is in, you know, the kids are supposed to say yes or no. And if the children are supposed to say yes, obviously. And if the children say no, the teachers are instructed by the script to correct the children and tell them, yes, this is a family. Anyone is a family who loves and cares for each other. So literally the children are being catechized, you know, yes or no, call and response kinds of questions, telling them what families are. I mean, it includes telling three-year-olds what a lesbian is. Thankfully, they don't actually talk about different kinds of sex, but they, you know, so they kind of elide over that, which is really, you know, that's the only distinction between a lesbian and a heterosexual person is the kind of sex that they have. But thankfully, that isn't gone into. But I think most parents would think that, you know, talking about lesbians or transgenderism to a three-year-old is not developmentally appropriate, you know, among other things.
I get the sense here, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the rapidity with which this has been introduced is not coincidental, that this stuff has been waiting in the wings educationally, at least in Illinois, for a long time. What are your thoughts?
Well, I am not familiar, you know, with the history of curriculum instruction in Illinois, but what I am familiar with is having read for a long time the way that curriculum is developed and then it kind of seeps out into public schools. And so it, in fact, is true. So when I looked through the materials that this school district is using, they haven't been prepared just in the last year or even three. You know, these documents have been around, created by hard left LGBT activist groups for more than a decade. Some of them, you know, were in existence before, you know, before the Obergefell decision basically is going to force all public schools to be teaching this, since same-sex marriage is now legal. There's nothing that anyone in a public school can say against it because, you know, it's the law of the land. So that kind of smuggles in all of this other gender identity stuff because of that massive legal change that the Supreme Court imposed on the nation. But, I mean, we also know that things like this have been, I mean, in very, very Democrat, very, very blue school districts, you know, things like this have been around for a number of years. So, I mean, so there has basically what usually is the trend is there's pilot schools, you know, places where the parents want this sort of thing happening. And so it happens because that matches the values of that community. And then they're used as kind of a pilot program. And then when something happens like this Illinois law requiring all public schools to do this, you know, then what they just do is copy and paste. They take the same thing that was started voluntarily in one place and then require it of everybody else everywhere, regardless of what the local conditions and desires are.
Is there any way to back out of this? Is there any way that our schools can be reformed back to teaching reality and not insanity to our kids?
I would like to be able to answer yes, because I think lessons like this are damaging to children. They're damaging to families. We do have research that indicates that when kids are placed in an identity politics saturated environment, they are more likely to, I mean, so if it's not cool to be a white boy, you know, if it's not cool to be just a plain girl, if you get more attention and interest and excitement and protection from teachers and such, if you are transgender or bisexual or whatever else, you know, the case may be, then, you know, the Brown University researcher put out a study finding that that social environment is linked to kids more being more likely to decide that they are something besides heterosexual. And that's also mirrored by the fact that, you know, the United Kingdom, we don't have as good of data in this United States, but in the past decade in the United Kingdom, we know that kids saying that they are transgender has increased 4,500% in the last decade. So that isn't, you know, we're not talking with numbers like that. We're not talking about something that was just below the surface, you know, and it's been hiding for all these centuries. No, there's something new happening, and there's definitely a social factor related to it. So I mean, we know that this kind of curriculum does affect kids, and that's a problem, because, you know, as even LGBT activists will say, and I do think is a concern for someone, you know, who loves everybody that God made, no matter what their specific sins are, people who identify as any one of these alternative sexualities have much higher rates of all kinds of problems, mental illness, self-harm, harmful relationships. They do more risky things, literally like not even wearing their seatbelts. You know, CDC surveys have found. So, you know, increasing this really does harm kids, and we don't really want to do that. So this is basically, you know, really damaging to kids. And the problem is that it's not just limited. I'm trying to think how to explain this. This isn't just limited to something that parents can opt their kids out of. So for example, in this school district, parents, once they heard about what, I mean, so this is the thing. Once parents hear about it, the damage has already been done, right? So you might hear about, I mean, state laws that govern sex ed typically require things like opt-out and parental notification, but schools are not teaching gender identity things under sexual education precisely for that purpose, so that they don't have to allow for notification and opt-out. So the usual procedure of things is for kids to see the video, kids to have read to them the book, Heather Has Two Mommies, and then after they're already exposed to it, they come home and they talk, and their mom and dad learn what happened, and they're outraged, you know, but it's already happened to their kid. So that's the typical procedure that happens. So this school district responded to parents finding out about it after the fact by saying, no, we won't allow anyone to opt out of it. You know, we stand behind this curriculum. And the other factor that's important to know is right within the curriculum itself, the school district that tells teachers, don't just use this during this one special week that we're particularly highlighting it. That's this week. This week is, you know, National Coming Out Week on Friday. So that's why they decided to do the instruction this week. But it says, bring these books about transgenderism, these picture books, into your literature classes, into your story time, into your arts and crafts. So the goal isn't for it to make it impossible for kids to opt out, for it to be completely tied into the rest of the curriculum and to become part of the fabric and the atmosphere of the school.
Joy Pullman is our guest. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about that 4,500% increase in children with gender dysphoria, how we might account for it with factors other than education, and then many, many hundreds saying, I want to change back. Stay tuned.
Girls will be boys and boys will be girls. It's a mixed up, muddled up, shook up world. It's up for love. La, 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 la.
Gospel reductionism replaces the Bible as the source and norm of theology with the gospel. What would a gospel reductionist edition of Luther's Small Catechism look like? Find out in the latest Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Dr. Russell Dawn details his journey from Anglicanism to Lutheranism. The free online Issues Etc. journal issuesetc.org.
Lutheran Federal Credit Union was formed to serve the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod community with mortgage and auto loans, checking and savings accounts, credit and debit cards. Lutheran FCU's Ministry of the Month for October is Lutheran Education Association. When you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, they'll give you cash back and give that same amount of money to Lutheran Education Association. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Good for you, good for the church. Lutheran Federal Credit Union, LutheranFCU.org.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission exists to support and encourage congregations in rural and small town settings. In partnership with LCMS districts, RSTM is uniquely positioned to make a major impact in revitalization support, community engagement and outreach training, congregational partnership development, and worker support through providing and developing resources geared specifically to rural and small town congregations. Check us out at lcms.org/RSTM or give us a call at our office. We're here to help.
Oh Lord, open my lips.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Make haste, O God, to deliver me.
Morning Chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October is called the Portals of Prayer Devotional Bible. It is what it sounds like. It is a devotional Bible that has over 700 portals of prayer devotions interspersed throughout the text of the English Standard Version. You can find out more about this devotional Bible at our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, and ask for the Portals of Prayer Devotional Bible, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October. Before the break, Joy, you mentioned that 4,500% increase in Great Britain of gender dysphoria. I'm curious about what appears to be maybe a little sanity emerging from what do you call it, a social contagion. How is a little bit, at least around the edges, of a reversal taking place?
I don't know if I would call it a reversal, but because so many people are flooding gender clinics, not just in the United Kingdom, but in the United States, because kind of like these things, you know how I talked in the last segment about how things will happen in very blue states or blue cities, San Francisco, whatever the case may be, and then it gradually spreads elsewhere. That's the case with transgenderism. So, I mean, we now have people who have been living as transgender, you know, for 10, 20 years. And so that means that there are people who are also what they call themselves formerly transgender people. And so the more people who undergo transgender treatment, you know, the more people there will be who regret that because they see what it does to their body. So there's the case a young woman has just done in the United Kingdom. She's decided to start a charity after she publicly came out as a former transgender, said, you know, this is not solving my problems. It's making them worse. I think transgenderism, you know, it's not an answer that it was sold to me. And she said she's received hundreds of contacts from other people who feel the same way that she does, so that she's trying to start a charity to help support them figuring out what to do as a result of that. But again, it's kind of like I mentioned to you earlier, you know, that is wonderful. And I wish these people peace and healing. Absolutely. And they deserve, you know, support and all the resources that we can give to them, just like every other hurting person does. But wouldn't it have been better for these people, and I know that they say it themselves, if they had never chopped off parts of their healthy bodies in the first place? Or, for example, you know, when young people are put on puberty blockers, you know, it makes them infertile for life. It also increases dramatically their risk for a number of heart conditions. So, I mean, you know, those are real, real harms that could be prevented if we were not just doing everything that the ideologues are telling us will be actually, I mean, it's you know, they're telling us to do to protect and help children the very things that actually harm children and make things worse for them.
What are we facing, given that massive increase in gender dysphoria, in the future, especially when parents are allowing children, or in some cases, let's just call it what it is, forcing children to act upon these mistaken ideas? What are we facing in the future with regard to the consequences of this? How would you summarize it?
Well, that's one thing I was thinking about, you know, when you said, you know, how could people maybe opt out of this? And part of, I mean, you can't really opt your child out of a complete social ecosystem. You know, so if your child is going to a school where children are learning this and they miss a couple of days or a week of the most intense instruction, all of the kids' peers have gotten that. It's the children talk. You know, they share videos with each other. You know, one of the, you know, ways that the Brown study also found that kids identify as transgender, very high link, was spending a lot of time on social media. You know, they're going on threads on Reddit. They're looking at YouTube videos. Parents want to believe, oh, I can opt my kid out of this, but it's really not possible. And the other, I mean, and it's the same thing. Public schools are really caught in the crossfire here. Even if they have a superintendent, a school leader, a school board who doesn't want to do this, if you have, you know, a parent in your school district who has a child that they say is transgender, they have the weight of myriad activist groups against them that will come in and will require even unwilling, you know, schools in a school district to do it. And there's not been one case of ever school boards or parents winning on this issue to actually protect children. So that's partly because the legal landscape is really, I mean, especially after Obergefell, what that really did was enshrine into U.S. law and make supreme law of the land the idea that men and women are interchangeable, right? Because if a man-man pairing is the same as a man-woman pairing, that means that men and women really aren't legally different anymore. So we already have that established, and it won't be everywhere immediately. But what we're seeing right now is really something that, I mean, it's part of the culture. It's impossible to opt your kids out, you know, if they're a part of that culture. And I think parents need to be taking, and churches need to be taking a lot more serious thought about and stop just pretending, you know, that kids will be okay, you know, because the kids are not being okay. When this is a part of their social environment, it deeply affects them. When it start, when you're telling them at age three, you know, that you don't need a mommy and a daddy, or that if you like dolls, then you have a girl brain, even if you have a boy body, you know, or vice versa. If you play with, or if you, you know, one of the things told the preschoolers was, if you love girls and boys, then maybe you're bisexual or transgender. And I'm thinking, I love both girls and boys. You know, it has nothing to do with my sexuality. Little kids of that age don't even know what sex is, right? So what you're basically telling them is, oh, you know, if I love my mommy and my daddy, maybe, you know, it's just completely confusing to them. So I think, and we also know that these sorts of confusing messages about sexuality are very damaging to kids' faith. Family breakdown has been shown to be linked to taking kids away from church, taking kids away from their faith. And so this is also an existential crisis for the church. And I, you know, I think if we care about evangelizing, if we care about our own, we have to start with our own children. You know, if our children are not protected, if their faith is not fed and nurtured, and if they're not given the things that they need and we're exposing them to things that are hostile to their faith, you know, what is the point of even having a church? if you can't protect the little sheep in your care, I mean, that's what Jesus says to his shepherd, feed my sheep. These little sheep need protection from the wolves, and we have to stop pretending they're not wolves, and we need to start treating them like they are and protecting those little lambs that Jesus has given the church.
Joy Pullman is managing editor of The Federalist, author of the book The Education Invasion, and recent columns titled How Illinois Schools Teach Preschoolers to Celebrate Transgenderism and Hundreds of Transgender People Want to Go Back to Their Birth Sex as Formerly Trans Woman. You'll find a link to her columns at issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Joy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll get a review of the movie Joker from Pastor Ted Geese, and we'll look forward to the feast and festival of St. Luke the Evangelist with Pastor David Peterson. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.